share our knowledge with someone else. And we ask you to send the Lord Jesus Christ holy name for
it. Amen. Good to see all of you today, and happy Mother's Day to all you mothers. And it is a real blessing to be a mother, isn't it?
Yeah. Never blessed when they leave home, but you know.
Yeah. Boy, when you get rid of them, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, when you quit paying
when you
them.
I don't know what this is all about. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
Into the mail. Did everybody else get one?
Oh, I'm sure. Seventh Day Adventist stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't get one in the mail, but you get them every now and then. We know that the Sabbath is Saturday, don't we? From Friday evening till Saturday afternoon is the Sabbath. Sunday will never be the Sabbath. We know all of that already. We know that the Catholic Church put it into law at the Council of Laodicea, I believe, is when it was signed into law by the Catholic Church. And we know that we meet on Sunday today. We could meet on Saturday or Friday or Wednesday. We do meet on Wednesday. And well, matter of fact, at this church, I think there's something going on here 7 days a week, isn't there? You ever been here when there aren't cars? Some kind of service going on, some kind of classes? The early church has met every day, and I think Valley Baptist Church does like that pretty much, too. This afternoon we'll be here. All right. That National Sunday Law there, and the Blue Laws and all of that, it was against the law, basically, in many places in the United States to work on Sunday. Remember that? I mean, most of you aren't old enough to remember that, but it was... Yeah. A lot of problems with Christendom is that they base what they believe on tradition and hearsay rather than the Bible. That's one thing I've tried to spend my whole ministry. My ministry basically, how many of you listened to Dr. H.T. Hubbard on the website yet? How many of you listened to Dr. H.T. Hubbard? I have 20-something messages in the Hall of Fame there by my teacher and my father in the faith. All right? You go listen to him teach. I based my whole ministry on him, on his way. He came from the Bible languages. And I just caught up with that. It was so natural for me, and I just kind of followed suit. And we were very, very close. Anyway, he preached from the Word of God, from Greek and Hebrew, and he studied a lot. His teachers, J. Lewis Guthrie, studied a lot of things. There are some books that he wrote on there. Even old Benjamin Marcus Bogard. A lot of these people, many things that we practice in Baptist churches today is not Bible. Did you know that? It's not Bible. It has no Bible basis on it. And the Sunday law and all that stuff really didn't have any Bible basis on it. I mean, they can go on and you can hear preachers preach on that kind of stuff, but it's all from hot air. We can meet any day of the week. We chose to meet on Sunday, and there's nothing wrong with it. The Seventh Day Adventist, and of course Garner Ted Armstrong, and they'll bash us for doing that, but we can meet on any day, which, like I said, here we do. All right, let's go to Matthew, the 16th chapter. Every now and then we have to touch on some of these modern customs and people going back. Sometimes some of these cults are right on one thing. Like the Jehovah Witnesses are right when they call their places of worship assembly halls. That's what all churches are, is assembly halls. A church house, the word church in the Bible, as we're going to see it today, the word church means assembly. Ecclesia means assembly. We're going to see that in this chapter today. Jesus, in the first four verses, he was condemning the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And he basically told them that their Mishnah, their Talmud, was kaput. That's men's laws, not God's law. And like I said, many times, some of the things that we practice today is tradition rather than truth. Tradition rather than truth. Tradition rather than truth. I've been in a lot of Baptist church where they take up an offering and they said, this is tradition. This is the Baptist trait. When I pastored a church, we never took up an offering. We didn't have an offering plate. But people gave anyway. Different things that we do. There's nothing wrong with taking up an offering. By the way, we had a missionary come and visit our church one time back then, and we were going to take up our offering. So we went in the kitchen and got a pot. Put the offering in. All right. Now let's go to Matthew 16:8, 16th chapter and verse number 5. Jesus called them an evil and adulterous generation, seeking after signs, because he gave them more than enough signs to prove that he was the Messiah. Verse number 5. And the disciples, the mathetes, the habitual learners, came to the other side and had forgotten the bread, to take bread. Food. That means food. All right? They didn't have any food. Now, do you think Jesus is capable of providing food for them when they wasn't any food? He could make rocks turn into bread, couldn't he, if he wanted to? Why, he had multiplied bread. He had fed 5,000, 7,000 men, plus 20 and 30,000 altogether, several different times with a few little things that just multiplied. He fed them like Moses fed Israel in the wilderness. And Jesus said to them, "Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. These are two different political groups that were very powerful in the day. All right, the Pharisees had control of every synagogue, didn't they? They were the spiritual leaders in every synagogue. And the Sadducees. The Sadducees. If you want, in some ways, the Sadducees were the most strict youth. They were the stricter of the group. They would only look at the five books of Moses. They didn't accept any of the traditions, any of the Talmud, any of the Mishnah. All right? No extra biblical interpretation, they said. All right? Beware of the leaven. Matthew 13 and verse 33. Someone go back there and read Matthew 13, 33 for me, please. Matthew 13, 33. Matthew 13, 33. You'll have to read it really loud because the microphone does not pick you up. All right, Brother Bill.
Another parable he spoke to them. The kingdom of heaven is like an leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till it was all leavened.
All right, now, leaven in the Bible represents what? What does leaven represent? What? Sin. Evil. All right, the woman, what was the woman? What was the woman in this? Who was the woman in this parable that we just had of the leaven?
Israel. All right. Give us a hint, Jim.
This is a test. I'm trying to find out what you learned before. All right. What does the woman represent in this parable of the leaven and the woman? The woman represents the same thing as it does in the book of Revelation. False religion. Liars. The devil's religion. False religion. Evil. Wickedness. Jezebel. Okay? Jezebel. False religion. The woman took leaven and hid it in the meal. All right. The woman took leaven and hid it in the meal. The meal represents all of the religious world. And leaven is a corruptive, it corrupts, doesn't it? It corrupts. But leaven also, what does leaven do in bread? What does it do in meal? Well, what's it do? What? It makes it rise. But as it rises in there, the leaven is a corruption. It is digesting it. It is pre-digesting it. Okay? And by the way, you can get too much yeast in your intestines and really get sick. Did you know that? You can. You need to have bacteria in there, and the yeast can take over sometimes and really make you sick. Anyway, the leaven gets up. What stops the leaven? How many of you ever had fresh bread? Fresh bread before it's cooked. You ever taste it? Taste it? Tastes pretty good, doesn't it? Yeah, it tastes pretty good. But how do you stop the leaven from ruining the whole loaf?
You
You've got to cook it in the oven. You've got to fire it. And heat basically stands for judgment. And all of this, when Jesus used these terms, it means judgment's coming. Remember we talked about the dragnet too, didn't we? Remember the dragnet? You know what a dragnet is? Remember dragnet on television? You know the guy with all this? But that's not what we're talking about there. Okay. A dragnet was something that they used to use in the Sea of Galilee, and they use them in the South. How many of you from the South? Brother Rex, did you ever noodle? You know what noodling is? That's where you go catch a fish with your hand. Okay? Well, you got hands-on. Boy, you know what you do when you noodle? How many of you know what noodling is? You know what noodling is? All right. You go down on the bank of a river, a muddy bank of a river, and in the river bank are holes where big catfish sit. Okay? And you put your hand, you go swim in there, and you have a rope tied around your waist because you can get an awfully big catfish. Why is the rope around your waist? Huh? To pull you back.
Yeah.
Once you get a hold of this big fish, boy, you're the lure. And let somebody else help pulling you in, because that catfish may weigh 50 or 60 pounds or 30 or 40. What you do is you put your hand in front of the hole and you feel for movement of the water. And if it's moving, it's like he's breathing like that, you can feel it. And then there might be a cotton watermouth moccasin in there or something else. You know, you got to watch all this stuff. Crawdads. You know, they're like a little freshwater lobster. And you put your hand in there and feel for this thing breathing. Well, you feel it. And you just put your hand in there and slip your hand right inside of his mouth and out the side and hold on to the grill and pull him out. And boy, you have got something. Got a tiger by the tail. And you pull him on out and somebody helps pull you out of the water so that catfish doesn't drown you. Okay? That's noodling. All right. Well, dragnet is kind of like that, but you get lots of fish. What you do is you have a net, and you tie lead sinkers or rocks on the bottom of it. And on the top, you tie bottles or corks or something to make it float. And you have several people go out, and they walk across the area, like out in the Sea of Galilee. They would take and they'd walk, and they pull this net. The bottom of it takes up all the fish off the bottom, and the floats are all the way up there, so you've got how far you've got. You've got 50 foot of net or whatever, and you're out there swimming and pulling it in. And then when you pull it up on the shore, you've got all of these out there. Well, what kind of fish did it say they had? Good fish and bad fish. Some of them snakes, some of them eels, some of them worthless fish.
They scales.
Yeah, well, the ones that they had to have scales on. So they'd throw all the catfish back, or else they would do something else. They'd build a fire on shore, and they'd throw in all the bad fish, and just throw them in the fire and burn them. At the end of the days, it says that he's going to have a dragnet, and the good will be separated from the bad. All right, the good's going to be separated from the bad. All right, now let's go on. This evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. And now in verse 4 or 5, and the disciples came to the other side and had forgotten to take bread. And Jesus said to them, "Watch out and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Back in Matthew 13 and verse 33, this is where he's referring back to. You see, and he's giving them a test, Brother Bill. This is a test. All right? And they began, it says began there, but in the original language it says they kept on interrogating each other, saying, "Is it because we took no bread?" But Jesus, aware of this, said, "You men of little faith, micro faith, why do you discuss, why do you interrogate among yourselves because you have no bread? Do you not understand or remember the 5 loaves or the 5,000, how many large baskets you took up, or the 7 loaves and the 4,000, how many baskets you took up? How is it that you do not understand that I do not speak to you concerning bread, physical bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." All right, the leaven, what is it? The false teaching. Their false teaching had completely corrupted all of Israel. Only a few had escaped the corruption. Mary. All right. John the Baptist. Martha. The few of the disciples had escaped. Matthew 16 and verse number 11. Biscuits and gravy, Dr. John. Yeah. Verse number 12. And they understood that he did not say, beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he began, or he kept on asking the disciples. He was interrogating them. He kept on asking them over and over and over again. Who do the people say that the Son of Man is? Who do they say the Son of Man is? What do they mean by the Son of Man? He's using a term here. What in the world does it mean? Go back to the book of Daniel. Who was the Son of Man in the book of Daniel? The Son of Man was in the fiery furnace, wasn't he? Who was the Son of Man? That's the pre-incarnate Christ. Now he's asking them, who do they say that I am? Who do they say that the Son of Man is? Who is the Messiah? Did he really come? Is this Mary's son? Is this the Messiah? Who do they say that I am? All right. And here is what some of them said. All right. And they said, some say John the Baptist. John the Baptist. Well, John the Baptist had already been killed, hadn't he? Some of them say, well, this is John the Baptist reincarnated, or he rose from the dead. He's resurrected. And some said Elijah. We know that Elijah was taken up in heaven, don't we? Elijah was taken up in heaven. Well, maybe God let him come back down. Maybe he's going to preach. All right. By the way, Israel keeps looking for Elijah today. They missed the boat. He already came. Elijah was John the Baptist in spirit. Elijah's already come and gone. Every time they have a cedar, they set and they set a place for Elijah. And they call for Elijah, where are you? I'd like to just knock one of them upside the head with a baseball bat and say, you dumb sucker, he's already come. What's wrong with you? Did you miss him? How did you miss him? All the miracles that he performed that proved who he was? Dummies. And other Jeremiah, the weeping prophet Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And then he said to them, but who do you say that I am? Now he's talking to his church. This is his little nucleus of his church. These are the mathetes. These are the habitual learners that are following him everywhere he goes. Okay? And by the way, they're already apostles. The church is already, the church is already doing what? Already baptizing people. They have large meetings. We know that 5,000 and 10,000 people are coming, and many of these people are believing upon him. But who do you say that I am? And Peter jumps up. Simon Peter. All right, Simon. Simon means what? What word in the Old Testament, what name in the Old Testament is Simon? What should it be actually translated? Not Simon, but what? No, what this word Simon, how should the word Simon be actually written in the New Testament? It's an Old Testament name. Simeon. 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 All right. If we made everything according to Hoyle, like it was in the Old Testament, we didn't make any mistakes, and we come here, it would be Simeon. Now, what does Simeon mean?
One of years?
Huh?
Is it one of years or
teachers? That's right. An A-plus for today, young lady. One who hears. One who listens. Simon Peter. One who listens. Now, what's the word Petros?
Look at this word Petros.
Here we have the word Petros. That Brett didn't come here today. I was depending on Brett to be here today. And he didn't show up. I'm going to get him. Because he had a Bible that I wanted to look in the middle column of that Bible. Does anyone here have the Hebrew Greek study Bible by Spyro Zodiotis? Nobody's got that. Well, right in the center column there, it shows you this very same thing. Petros and Petra. All right?
it's petros like this, and petra like this.
Does the Bible translate it to English, Jim?
No.
It's just all Greek and Hebrew.
It's all Greek and Hebrew. But over there in Spiros Odiotis' Bible, it will tell you in the middle of it, it'll tell you, Petros means little stone. Petros means little stone. What kind of a stone? A stone you can pick up and throw. A little stone. All right? A little stone. Petros means a little stone. All right, now what does Petra mean? Petra. A gigantic stone like Morro Rock. Like the Rock of Gibraltar. Okay? Like the Rock of Moriah. The whole mountaintop over there on Moriah. Over here, on this mountaintop here in Jerusalem, that whole top is called Mount Moriah. The Rock of Moriah. It's very large. Okay? It's a very large rock. That's what the word Petra means. Okay, now let's look at it from this standpoint. Now, remember what we're saying here. And Simon Peter answered and said, now Matthew writes this down, doesn't he? Matthew is writing. Matthew is doing the writing. All right. Peter talked to Jesus. Jesus is responding to him, but we're written from Matthew's point of view. How does Matthew look at Jesus? How does Matthew look at Jesus? What? How does he look at it?
The Son of Man?
No. The King of Israel. The King of Israel. So, look at it from that point of view now. If you get a book and start reading a book, if it's an old book or whatever, see if you can find a biography or a short biography of the writer. So you can understand from what point of view is he writing. I have... How many of you have been to my home? A lot of you have. I have a lot of books. I have a lot of real good history books. When I study history, if I study Western history or whatever it is, I try to get... If I'm going to study about Billy the Kid, I'm going to try to get a book if Billy the Kid wrote it. I don't have one, but I've got a lot of them about Billy the Kid. All right, Cole Younger. Cole Younger was related to my family. The Daltons and the Youngers, their mother were full sisters. The mother of both of those families were full sisters. And I have one of my family married into the Daltons. Well, Cole Younger, he wrote a book, Cole Younger by Cole Younger. There was a book, Geronimo by Geronimo. You can find it. Geronimo by Geronimo. He wrote the book, Geronimo did. You can write a book. How many of you have heard of John Wesley Hardin, one of the most ravaged killers in the United States early West history? I've got a book, John Wesley Hardin by John Wesley Hardin. All right. How about Tom Horn? Know who Tom Horn was? That's the guy that they hung up in there. He was in the Apache Wars. He went with a Crook, huh? Yeah, he was over there, and then they turned on him and had him murdered. Basically, they murdered him. I've got a book, Tom Horn by Tom Horn. You want to know what it? There's the original sources. That's good. Anybody, time you look at a book, you need to find out who's doing the writing. So look here. Matthew's doing the writing. He's writing as if Jesus is the King of Israel. That's their standpoint. When you read here, right in the book, first part of the book of Matthew, he tells you that Jesus is the King of Israel. He gives his lineage, doesn't he? Right there. So now let's look at it. Matthew's writing. We know that this is the King of Israel. This is the Son of Man. This is the Messiah. When he says Son of Man here, he means the Messiah, the Son of Woman, the coming one, Jehovah in the flesh. That word in the Old Testament, okay? And Jesus, or Simon said, you are Christ. You are the Messiah. The Son of the living God. The Son of God. So that means God the Son. What he says here, you are God the Son, and you are the Son of God. Of the living God. You are the Messiah. You are the HaMashiach. The Messiah. Alright? You are the Messiah. Not a Messiah, but the Messiah. And verse number 17, now here's Jesus answering now. Remember, from Matthew's point of view, he's writing all these things down. And Jesus caught up in speech. That's what it literally says in Greek. And Jesus caught up in speech and said to him, "Blessed you are, Simon." Alright, he called him Simon. That, what should that be? Simon? Simeon? Simon means one who hears. And then he uses a different word here now. He spoke to Peter here in Aramaic. His name in Aramaic. Barjona. 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 Bar is the Aramaic word for son. All right. Ben is Hebrew. Ben is Hebrew. Ben is Hebrew. But Bar is Aramaic. So he uses an Aramaic term here. Barjona, son of John in Aramaic. Okay? Because he spoke Aramaic a lot. So here we have Aramaic quoted in the Bible. The Bible is written in Greek. That's the language of the Bible. All right? If Jesus used a different term, it will quote it in Greek and use that language. All right? And here it does. Here we use Aramaic. Because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you. Flesh and blood. All right? What are the words here? Flesh is sarx and blood, haima. What is flesh in Hebrew? Basar. What is blood? Dam. All right. Did not reveal this to you. And what does that mean? It didn't come from your human nature. It didn't come from your Adamic nature. This didn't come... Peter... Lost people don't understand what you understand. Because Peter, you are born again. You are born from above, Peter. When you're born the first time, you're born into what? Into sin. You're born into the world. You're born into death. You're born into sin. You got your sin nature from your mom and papa. But this nature that Peter is revealing here is not from his mama and daddy. This is from above. Peter, you're a saved man. That's what he said. You are spiritually enlightened, Peter. But my Father who is in heaven... All right. Flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. Verse number 18 now, this is a very misunderstood. This verse, if anything else, mark this verse, put asterisk stars, gold stars, red stars, green stars, all over around this, because the world doesn't understand this. Half of the Protestant world doesn't understand this today, nor any of the Catholic world. They're going to get this one all wrong. And I say, but, he says here, but, it starts off with but. All right. Actually, it's got two buts. But. It's what it says. Cago de. But. But I say to you. All right. I say to you, that you are Petros. What is the Aramaic word for Petros? What is the Aramaic for Petros? Cephas. He doesn't use that word. He doesn't use the Aramaic word here because he's going to use a play on words. He used a little Aramaic earlier, but now we're going into Greek, pure Greek. He said, but you are Petros, not Cephas. Petros means a small stone. That's what it looks like right there in Greek. Okay? Petros. You are a little stone. And then he uses the word chi here, but here it is a conjunction. It is a adversative conjunction. He's using this chi differently here. Page 208, if you want to look that up in a little Zonneman's analytical Greek lexicon, all right? But, strong adversative conjunction here. But upon, taute this, the Petra, foundation rock. The Petra, the foundation rock. And that foundation rock is who? Let's just look and see who, if we can figure out who the foundation rock is. 1 Peter 2:4-8. Here's Peter now. Since Peter, he's talking to Peter, and he's talking to his church. All right? He said, "You're Peter, but I say unto you all." All right? He's getting ready to say this. 1 Peter 2:4-8. Let's go there real quick. 1 Peter 2:4-8. Anna, would you come up here and read that? Can you do that for me? Because you will be right into the microphone. I don't want to miss this way over yonder.
I don't have it yet.
You don't have it? 1 Peter 2:4-8? 1 Peter 2:4-8. You're 2:4-8. Do you have that? Can you? This is too important to miss it. You got it? Can you come right up here? Where you, it'll pick you up on the microphone. All right, 2:4-8. Read that for me.
You are coming to Christ, who is the living cornerstone of God's temple.
All right, what's the cornerstone? Foundation stone. That's what everything was built upon, the foundation stone.
He was rejected by people, but he was chosen by God for great honor. And you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple.
All right, upon that foundation stone.
What's more, you are his holy priest. Through the mediation of Jesus Christ, you offer spiritual sacrifices that please God. As the scriptures say, I am placing a cornerstone in Jerusalem, chosen for great honor. And anyone who trusts in him will never be disgraced.
All right. Now let's go on a little bit further. Thank you. Let's go on a little bit further. Now in the Old Testament, we've been having people read back there, but you can't pick it up on the microphone. John, you will yell loud enough to get it on there. All right. Let's look a little bit further. Now let's go back in the Old Testament a little bit, and let's see if we can figure out who this rock of Israel is. Okay, this rock. All right. Numbers 20:8. Numbers 20:8. Roger, you over there? No, nope, not. Numbers 20:8. Numbers 20:8. Dr. John, you over there?
Yes.
Can you holler out real loud? Let's see if it'll pick you up.
Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock. And give drink to the congregation and their animals.
Okay, the rock of the Old Testament. Who did Jesus say the rock was that followed Israel? He was the rock of Israel. All right. let's go to Psalm 18:2. Psalm 18, there's a lot of verses. There's Numbers 20:8, 2 Samuel 22:2, 32 and 47. Psalm 18:2, 31:3, 42:9, 62:2, 71:3, 78:16, Deuteronomy 32:4-15, 2 Samuel 23:3, Isaiah 8:14-17:10. That's a lot of them. Every one of these say one thing, that Jesus is the rock, that Jehovah is the rock. All right, let's go back to Psalm 18:2. Anyone have that? You got that, Brother Roger? Can you read that real loud?
The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
Okay, now that is in the Old Testament. So who is the word Lord there? Who is Lord? That's Jehovah. All right? Jehovah. Okay? That's who it is. Now, we've looked at all of these different things. Let's look at a couple more. Isaiah 8:14. Isaiah 8:14. Dr. John, you already up there?
No, I'm ready, Bill.
Oh, you're still. Brother Bill, run up here, Brother Bill. Come on, you're too far away.
I'm not loud enough.
No, you're not loud enough. You've got to run up here. They might want to see who you are anyway. All right.
He will be as a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both the house of Israel, as a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
All right, it's talking about Jesus, isn't it? Jesus is the rock of Israel. Do we have any? Now, who does the Catholic Church say that this rock is?
Peter.
It's not Peter. Who does Peter say the rock is?
Jesus.
Who does all the Old Testament say the rock is?
Jehovah.
And Jesus is Jehovah. In the New Testament, where do we have the Jehovah title fulfilled? In what verse? Can anyone quote it to me in Hebrew and Greek? Come on. John 1:14 is the fulfillment of the Jehovah title. Kai hologo sarx agenito, and the word flesh, the Jehovah flesh, he became. There it is. All right, now let's go on with this Matthew 16 and 18. This is one of the most important foundational scriptures in the New Testament when it relates to God's New Testament church. All right? And the church was already here. He had already called it out. All right. Now, he said, you are Peter, but not on you, Peter, but upon this great big Petra. And who is the Petra? Jesus, Jehovah. All right? I shall be building up oikodomeso. All right? First person singular, future indicative active. It comes from oikos. Try to find something that rhymes. Oikos. Oikos in Greek. That's it. Right there. Oikos. In Hebrew, it's Beth. House. That means house. House. Oikos is house. All right. Oikodomeso. It comes from domio. Domio, which means we got our word dome from it. What do you do when you build a house? How do you build a house? Do you build the roof first? Got to have a foundation. Then you got a wall, and then you put the roof on, the dome it up. All right? The foundation is whom? Of the house of God. And the house of God is not the church building. Who did Peter say all of the stones in the building were? You are. We are all stones in that building. The stones are not physical. They are spiritual stones. People that have been saved, that's what builds the church up. It is the ecclesia, all right? The assembly, okay? The assembly. The pillar. By the way, the word Adonai,
if I can get that up here someplace, maybe I can write it with different colors. Adonai.
All the Jesus disciples, all of them, they called him Adonai, didn't they? Lord. All right, they called him Lord in Hebrew, but what do they call him in Greek? Kyrios, which meant the same thing as Adonai. Do you know what Adonai means? It means a pillar, a foundation. Isn't that beautiful? A pillar of foundation. That's what Adonai. If you want to go look it up on Gesenius, page 14. All right? Brown, Driver, and Briggs on page 10 and 11. Kohler and Bumgarner on page 16. And Davison's on page 8. All right? The temple, the pillars, Jachin and Boaz in 1 Kings 7 and 21. Look at that. 1 Kings 7 and 21. Let's go look at that for just a minute. 1 Kings 7:21 and 2 Chronicles 3 and 17. Let's look at that real quick. All right. 1 Kings 7 and 21 and 2 Chronicles 7 and or 3 and verse 17. Anyone have that? You have to be able to get. If you're far away, you got to come up here and get close to the microphone. Joanna, you got it? You want to run up here? All the way up here? No. Bill ran up here a while ago. I got him up here close enough to where they could hear him. Come right over here. All right. 1 Kings 7:21. I don't know what it says there in that New Living Bible. I don't know what it says. But we'll find out in a minute. So I will say anything. It's probably explained things really well. Go ahead, Joanne. 1 Kings 7:21.
Haram set the pillars of the entrance of the temple, one toward the south and one toward the north. He named the one on the south Jachin and the one on the north Boaz.
All right, Jachin and Boaz. Jachin and Boaz. Now, what do these pillars in front of the temple of Solomon, what do they hold up? Is there a porch above them or anything? Huh? Jachin and Boaz. Huh? It's like a vestibule, all right, or kind of like that. But what does it hold up? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But you know what they do hold up? Remember, in His strength and in His glory. What does it hold up? What do they represent? The whole universe. The whole universe. Colossians, the first chapter. What does the whole universe stand and fall upon? Jesus Christ and His Word. The whole universe. He holds up and holds together the whole universe. That's what Jachin and Boaz stands for. By the way, Jachin and Boaz is the temple, and the temple of Solomon represents what? The church in the millennial reign. Christ in the millennial reign and the church in the millennial reign. Okay? All right, 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 17. We've got some of you up here. Who has got that? 2 Chronicles 3 and verse 17.
Dr. March is
done. All right. Brother John, come right up here real quick. You can't find 2 Chronicles? Come on, Dr. John. 2 Chronicles 3:17. Run up here real quick. Got to get you up here. Right up here close. These are very important scriptures. They can't miss out there out in the world. All right? 2 Chronicles 3 and 17.
Then he set up the pillars before the temple, the one on the right hand and the other on the left. He called the name of the one on the right hand, Jachin, and the name of the one on the left, Boaz.
All right. There we go. And what do they hold up? And what are they standing on? The Rock of Moriah. That whole Rock of Moriah, what did that represent there? That was where the sacrifice was. What did it represent? The whole rock. Jesus was the foundation. Jesus is the foundation of all Jerusalem. You want to know who the foundation of a city of Jerusalem? The city of Jerusalem doesn't have a seaport, doesn't have an airplane port, it has nothing. Nothing there to make it special to where it would be the center of the world. But God chose it, and that is where the rock will be set. There is where the temple will be set, and that is where Jesus is going to come back down, isn't he? Over there on the Mount of Olives. Jerusalem will be very important at that time. Let's go on a little bit. Man, there are 50 scriptures that we could go to here. 50 of them at least. All right. John 1:42, Luke 22:31-32. You are Peter, but upon this, the foundation rock, I shall be building up of me the ecclesion. The ecclesion, the ecclesion. Now, what does the word ecclesia, what in the world, where does that come from? In the old and archaic period of time, it's an old Greek word. Jesus used a common Greek word that they would understand. Every city-state in the Roman and the Greek Empire, all the way back to the Greek Empire, was a little democracy. They were little democracies. The whole big nation, the nation, the Greek Empire, had little city-states. And in every little city-state had an elected ecclesia in it. And that ecclesia is what was called out to make decisions in the little areas.
The church.
Huh?
The church.
It was a little ecclesia, ones called out. That's what it meant. When Jesus came on the scene, He called His newly called out ecclesia His little democratic force that would be existing in a giant empire. Separate little democracies, little Baptist churches here and there throughout the whole world in the end. Within the empire. All right? A lot of words in here. We could spend 3 weeks on this, Sister Andino. All right. She's building up the church of me, the ecclesia, the ones called out. Deuteronomy 32, 3 and 4. Psalm 22 and verse 36. Daniel 2, 31. And Pele. That's it. Pele, right there. Pele. I believe we get our word pillar from that. There has to be, it means gates. But before you can hang a gate, you got to have something to hang it on, don't you? You got to have a pillar to hang a gate on. So that's what it means. And it says the gates of Hadu.
That's it, Hadu. In English, it's like Hades. In Hebrew, it's what?
Sheol. All right? The gates of the unseen world. The gates of Sheol, the gates of Hades. The very administrative. Where was the gate? In the gate of every city, inside the walls, in the gates of every city, what was assembled there all the time? What was assembled inside of every gate of every city? When Abraham went into the, Lot went into Sodom and Gomorrah, in the gates, he said in the gates of the city, and what did that represent? It was the courthouse. The courthouse. The administrators. I've been trying to bring out a little bit of something to you lately. You know, and we have local government, and we have state government, and then we have federal government, don't we? Our local government is our supervisors, our sheriff, our representatives. We have representatives. We have senators. And then and we go all the way up into Washington, D.C., and we have president up there. And we got all kinds of representatives here to there, way overpaid. That's all I got to say. They ought to put them on minimum wage. Originally, they volunteered their time. They didn't want to stay in there very long if they were volunteering, you know, and paying their own way. Well, in the angelic world, in the spiritual world, it's the same way. We have peon angels and peon spirits all the way up till they get very powerful. Rising in their levels of authority and their level of power. Some are so powerful that they have to be locked in chains and darkness. They got to be locked down in maximum security. Maximum security. Locked down. There's about 100 million of them over there in Tigris and Euphrates. You want to know why we have so much trouble over there in that country? We got about 100 million demon spirits over in that area. What? Find out in the book of Revelation how many the Lord leashes, turns them loose over there. They're stationed right there right now. Okay? All right, the gates, the very foundation of the unseen world. Been trying to lead you up where you can understand. There's a whole bunch. There's a gob of spiritual forces all around us all the time. If you could only see them, it would probably make your hair stand on end. But they're here right now. They're in this room. They're all around us, spiritual forces. They're real. Just as real as the chairs there and as you are. All right? This is real. The gates of hell, the courtrooms of hell, the administrators of hell, they shall not wrestle her down. Third person plural, future indicative active. They shall not wrestle her down. That comes from katiskuo. It means they aren't stronger than she is. What makes the churches of the Lord Jesus Christ so strong? What makes them so strong? Huh? Jesus. Because it's that the church is founded upon that foundation. It's founded upon Jesus. Not sand. Not quicksand. There's a whole lot of churches out there founded on quicksand. I want you to get the idea of this universal church business out of your mind. What's the word Catholic mean?
General.
Universal. You know where the universal church idea came from? From Catholicism. And it came right down into Protestantism. The truth, real, true New Testament churches are local, visible bodies of believers. You can see them. Not some invisible thing. The Catholic Church said, we are the church. And here's the church over here. And you're all little parts of this little church. And we are the head. But that's not what the truth is. Jesus is the head of His church. And each little local ecclesia is out there is a little democratic body taking care of itself under the rules of the kingdom, just like it was the ecclesias in the time of Greece and in the time of Rome. Okay? Now let's go on a little bit further. Shall not wrestle her down. Ephesians 6 and 10. Ephesians 6. Boy, like I said, we could do 2 or 3 weeks on this one. Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Let's look at it. I've been trying to explain to you the last few weeks about the spiritual powers because we were coming here to Matthew 16 and 18. Ephesians 6 and 10 says, finally be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the armor of God that ye may be able to stand firm against the schemas. The schematic methods of the devil, Diabolos. For we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against rulers. This is the whole. This is Matthew 16 and 18, put into action. This is what we're fighting, people. This is what the Lord's churches are fighting. It said that the spiritual forces of hell would not wrestle the Lord's church down. It didn't say it wouldn't try. The Lord founded one church, and the devil imitates it 1,000 different ways. Put on the full armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles, the methods, the schemes, the battle plans of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against powers. Let me look at that in Greek. That's much better in Greek than it is in English. If I can find it here. Ephesians 6. All right. Our wrestling in close quarters, that's the word Paul A. Against flesh and blood, but against archates, the rulers. Remember, we have archangels? We have archangels? Now, the Jews have 7 archangels. We, as Christians, we believe that there are 3 archangels. But we got the main archangel that we're fighting, don't we? Who is he? Satan or Lucifer. And against exousios. These are the gates. These are the administrators and the gates. How many devils, how many demons, how many fallen angels are constantly nipping at the heels of God's churches? How many? Authorities. And against the Cosmokratoros. Cosmokratoros. We got cosmos in that word, don't we? And then kratoros. Kratoros means to grab by force. We got world grabbers. World grabbers. That's what it means. World grabbers. And against of the darkness, of the skotia, of darkness. This is kind of spooky. It ought to be spooky because it's real. This, and against pneumatica, the spirit world. I hate to get off too far on this stuff. There was a professor out of San Francisco that went down into South America. And he went down in South America because he wanted to study shamanism. And in shamanism, a lot of times there's drugs. And down in South America, they would give drugs to these people, and they would, the shamans would go and make spirit treks. They would make little trips. And the American Indian people, you know, I was a spiritual leader among them for about 10 or 12 years directly with them. I had to be very careful because I'm going to tell you something. There's some spiritual forces there that are powerful. Okay? I did sweat lodges. I had the pipe ceremonies, everything else like they did. I was trying to lead them to the God of the Bible and away from these spiritual powers. Because they're right there. This guy went down there. This is a professor now out of a university up there in San Francisco. He goes down there and they give him this drink. And he goes off into the spirit world. And he starts traveling. And he goes down deep into the earth. The darkness of the earth. And he saw all kinds of spirit beings out down there. All kinds of spirit beings. Do you think he really went there? You better believe he did. His spirit went there. You have a spirit. Your spirit. You are...
That's no good.
You are body and soul and spirit. All right? And your spirit can travel. It is spirit. It's paranormal. Beyond normal, okay? Your spirit. Though that demonic culture took his spirit for a trip. And he went down deep into the earth. And he looked all kinds, and he saw all kinds of spirit world in there. And he said that these were the spirits that created the heavens and the earth. These are the spirits that created the heavens and the earth. We created the earth, and we live in people. Spirits, demon spirits, do what? They don't have form, do they? What do? They seek to live in human or animal flesh. I listened to a shaman one time that said he went to the moon and walked on the moon before the white man ever did. You know something? The man went to the moon. That's possible in the spirit world. They go in there, and I'll tell you something, these spirits are not held down by time and space. People will go into trances and think that they lived 700 or 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 years ago. They might think they're Genghis Khan or somebody else, Alexander the Great, and they can tell you everything. They can speak the languages. How do they do it? Are they really that person? No. These spirits are not held down by space and time. We wrestle against powerful spiritual forces. But we got one bigger than them. We got one better than them. We have Jesus, the creator of the heavens and the earth, the one that created them before they had fallen and before they had become wicked. What gives Buddha, statues of Buddha, power to hold people into that religion? The spirit world. The spirit world. That's what happened. The spirit world is very strong. It's very real. We'll go on there more next week. That was just preview of the coming attractions. We're going to get into some deep, wild stuff here as we study the spirit world. The spirit, the Pilei of Hedu, the gates of Sheol. All right. Thank you for your attention. I hope you enjoyed it. Brother Bill, hope it didn't scare you. Hope you don't have nightmares over this. Our God is greater than all of that.
Have a good lesson. Good lesson.